WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This month, a first-of-its-kind law went into effect in North Carolina that makes it a misdemeanor for students to commit certain online offenses against school employees. This new cyberbullying law has its roots in Charlotte and at CMS. It breaks new ground in protecting teachers and staff, but it also troubles many because they see it as curbing the free speech rights of students. We're going to take a look at the problem, the law, and the consequences, and we'll hear from both sides on this issue. Later in the program, we'll hear from Judy Kidd, president of the Classroom Teachers Association of North Carolina, and from the legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union, North Carolina. We'll also hear the reaction of a sampling of students to the law. But first, we explore how and why we got here with Lisa Miller, education reporter for WFAE. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Doss Helms is here. She's the education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Good to see you again as well.
Good to be back.
And Detective Kenneth Lynch is with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Police Department. He was hired in 2008 primarily to deal with Internet-related issues. Thank you for joining us as well.
Appreciate it.
When we think about cyberbullying with regard to young people, teenagers and schools, I usually think of peer-to-peer cyberbullying. How big a problem is this with children bullying their teachers online?
Well, I think that obviously over the last few years, especially with the onset of social media, it's not quite, at least in Mecklenburg County, it's not quite as big as you've seen across the state. But, you know, we'll probably get a couple of cases a month of a teacher calling in or a staff member calling in with somebody that's posted some disparaging remarks on, Facebook or Twitter. It hasn't been that big of a problem here in CMS.
But CMS is the instigator of this.
Well, and while I wasn't involved in the creation of the law or anything like that, my understanding, we've had some cases, probably one of the more severe cases that I recall early on in, when I came to CMS was a few years back where someone created a Facebook account and then posted some disparaging remarks about a teacher and then attached some links to a pedophile website and made some comments implicating him as a pedophile. That's probably one of the more severe cases. But at the time, there was no law that really, addressed that particular issue. And we did use a cyberstalking law, but ultimately it was dismissed.
So. How about libel? The libel laws.
Yeah, well, I think those are civil. Those are civil issues, and those are options that a teacher could take if they chose to pursue that type of activity. They'd obviously have to retain an attorney to go that route. But from a criminal standpoint, which is what I focus on, and enforcing the laws, there just at the time wasn't anything that was appropriate.
And Mike, my understanding is how this law came into place was that they're working on a school violence prevention law, and so lawmakers were talking to teachers, and one of them being Judy Kidd with the Classroom Teachers Association, hearing what they had to say about what they might, their problems. And one of the things was the first part of the bill was talking about, if a teacher is breaking up fights, for example, at a school, that they can't be charged with something right away. And so Judy Kidd was one of the people who's a teacher here at Independence who had heard, a handful of these incidents here and said, hey, this has been a problem. And lawmakers said, okay, well, let's see what we can do let's write a law and get ahead of the problem.
And we'll hear from her later in the program. But you mentioned a couple things that I find interesting, Detective, and that is that the libel laws would give a teacher civil recourse. And this law, this new law, gives them criminal recourse.
Right. It gives them an extra layer of protection.
I mean, the example that you used of opening a MySpace or a Facebook account, a fake one, and then posting links to pedophile websites and making it look like this teacher was a pedophile is a pretty serious infraction of almost anything I can think of.
Sure.
But is it criminal? And why wouldn't a civil action be sufficient?
Right. Well, and I think that this law is going to help us to protect teachers and staff members against that type of activity. That's a pretty severe case. You know, you got to look at the long-term effect of what that type of activity can do for that particular teacher. You know, the day of the spoken word, you know, was limited to the people that could hear it. Unfortunately, nowadays, it's limited to who has an internet connection and who has a social networking site or Twitter. So it can have a long-lasting effect on a teacher who's looking to get promoted or looking to for employment elsewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, once that their name is Googled, it could create all kinds of problems for them.
That was a pretty severe instance. Because this happens, you say, a couple times a month, what kinds of things are posted about teachers or staff members or principals in the long run?
In the long run. Well, I spend a good bit of time looking at, online feedback forms, and that is an avenue where people can send an online feedback message to a teacher or a staff member, and usually it's via email. And many times I'll get calls where they're receiving from an anonymous email account, just some pretty nasty and disparaging emails, and usually those are easy to track down. I know recently we had at one particular school where a teacher had someone created a fake Twitter account using his name and then, started posting tweets on there. And, of course, other kids started joining in. And this just creates a situation where it gets out of control inside the schoolhouse, mm-hmm. and it makes it difficult for that teacher
to teach. And what kinds of things are being tweeted in that situation?
Well, all kinds of things. Most of the time it is just – I don't like my teacher, calling the teacher names. Generally, there are issues that probably wouldn't, cross that line into a criminal offense, and we are usually able to handle those in-house with some sort of disciplinary action, which our student code of conduct covers. And quite honestly, we found that that's the best way to run it.
Now, I have two women here. I've not spent a lot of time in ladies' rooms, so I don't know what's on the wall in the ladies' room. But I do know what I grew up with as a kid in school, and I knew it was on the bathroom stalls in the men's room. How is this different from what kids scribble on the bathroom walls in the men's room? What's the difference?
Well, I think the difference is the audience. The bathroom wall is limited to the number of people that comes into that bathroom.
Yeah.
Whereas, on Twitter or on social media, it's gone. Once it's out there, you can't take it back, and it can have long-lasting effects.
Well, what about gossip? I mean, gossiping on the playground among young people,
all of this, the impulse is not new. It's not that kids have suddenly become horrible.
Yeah.
I think there are an awful lot of people our age who are thinking, thank goodness the internet did not exist when we were younger, because we did the stupid things,
But in reality, who's Facebook? What's the audience for a Facebook page or a tweet if it's not just among the young people who are friends, who are following each other on Facebook and following each other's tweets? What's really the difference? You're not going to get somebody in California necessarily looking at somebody's tweets.
Well, can go viral if, for whatever reason, it starts circulating among the school community. And there's always the issue, I think, of, like he said, you apply for a job in another district and they do a basic background check and, search your name, and all of a sudden some stuff's popping up. Again, in most cases, you would think common sense would tell you this isn't really something that this person did, but I think there's just always this fear. This really is, I think, set up to be the last line of defense. As Detective Lynch mentioned, most of these incidents are going to get handled in the principal's office.
At whose option? In other words, if I'm the aggrieved teacher, is it my option to use this law to go after the student or students who posted this material, or is it the principal? Because you brought up that most of these things will be handled in the principal's office, and so did you, Ann. But
right.
If I'm the aggrieved party, what's to say I don't take you to court and prosecute you criminally?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, ultimately, they're the victim, and when they file a police report, it's my obligation to investigate it. And I will tell you, it's been my experience over my time investigating this type of activity that most teachers or staff members want it taken down. They want it removed, and they're not really interested in prosecuting mm-hmm. a student. at that time. But they want it removed, and we generally are able to do that.
Has there not been a cyberbullying law on the books in North Carolina since 2009?
Yeah, the cyberbullying law has been around a couple of years, but it focused primarily on student-on-student behavior. It did not encompass student-on-teacher.
Why wouldn't it? I mean, bullying is bullying.
Sure.
Is it specifically worded to say student-to-student bullying?
I think the best way to look at it is, you know, the law has always lagged behind technology, and I think it's just catching up. You know, obviously some other parts of the country are experiencing a little more and more severe cases than we have here. But quite frankly, I think it's just, like I said, the legal system and the laws are catching up with technology.
And CMS has an anti-bullying policy and has for a few years that does not specify in terms of, you know, either who is the victim or who is the perpetrator. You know, it's that these things will not happen regardless of whether it's a student or an adult involved. It doesn't really spell out the penalties, but obviously if you're an employee, mm-hmm. you know, disciplinary action.
Both of you cover the schools, Lisa and why isn't school policy enough to handle this problem? If you do this, you are in violation of school policy. You will be expelled, or you will be suspended, or you will be whatever.
Well, you can be suspended for up to 2 weeks for an offense like this. And, you know, basically I asked that question to some teachers and Judy Kidd, she'll get into that in the next segment. But she says, you know, hey, this is a crime. You know, this can get to a serious point. And if you put a kid on, suspension, you're just giving that kid, you know, what they want. And in some cases, she says, you know, it doesn't make a big deal. This makes it a mark on their record.
So why did the legislature seem to latch on to this and feel that this needed the weight of criminal law?
Well, the main sponsor was...
We're talking about kids here.
Right. State Senator Tommy Tucker, who is from Waxhaw, just right outside Charlotte, spoke with Judy Kidd, and she kind of got the ball rolling with him. And he says that he spent a couple of years talking to pretty much all the organizations, all the professional organizations, excuse me, all of the people who might have a view on whether this is needed, and that they worked out a law that, in his view, met all the needs without going overboard. Mm-hmm. Not everybody agrees with that. If you're going to hear from the ACLU, we're going to hear from some people who think they did, in fact, go way overboard and drafted a law that's not going to probably stand the test of the courts.
This went into effect 20 days ago on December 1st. Are kids within the school system well aware that this law is now in place? Did the school system put out some sort of information flyer or memo to these kids?
I don't know if they've sent anything out to the kids. I know some things were sent. Some information was sent out to teachers. I have long been doing internet safety classes in CMS, and I became first aware of the law back in early July over the summer when we received our state-mandated legal update. So I started to introduce it in my internet safety classes and presenting it to kids. So I think students are aware that it's out there. And, you know, like I said, it's just not something that I see as a huge problem in CMS. Surprisingly, though, because we're such a large system, but generally, they're the cases that I've previously said. You know, we're able to take care of them.
So, in these internet classes that you've been teaching before this law and after this law, does it come as a surprise to students that they shouldn't be doing some of these things on the internet? Is it a revelation to them that this is a bad thing? This is wrong.
They don't think about it like that. You know, most of the time they think about it as joking and playing around, and they don't see the long term effects. You know, I've often said the most important thing to a teenager is what's happening at that particular moment. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the issue. The real issue, too, is parents. And I don't think parents understand the information and the access their student has.
And we'll come back and talk about that in a few minutes. We'll also hear from both sides of this issue in terms of the pros and cons of it. Lisa Miller and Ann Doss Helms here, reporters, education reporters, and Detective Kenneth Lynch. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Wicked, the untold story of the Witches of Oz. Flying back to Charlotte for 3 weeks only, March 13th through the 31st. Tickets are now available at blumenthalarts.org. Monday is Christmas Eve. What better time to talk about Santa Claus? Well, maybe not the Santa Claus that is today, but the one that set the scene for Santa Clauses to come. There was more than one Santa Claus. It's been a long, long time, hundreds of years. And the first was St. Nicholas. And we're going to talk about the real St. Nicholas of Myra, who had a slightly different image from the jolly old fat man that we'll be visiting on Monday night. We'll be joined by Adam English, who's done a lot of research about St. Nicholas and how he became the Santa Claus we know today. That's Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. President Obama taps Vice President Biden to lead a gun violence task force. House Republicans vow to push a plan B to avert the fiscal cliff. And four State Department officials leave after a damaging report on Benghazi.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Lisa Miller, our education reporter here at WFAE, and Doss Helms, the education reporter at the Charlotte Observer, and Detective Kenneth Lynch with the CMS Police Department, who specializes in Internet issues. And, of course, we're talking about the law that went into effect on December 1st that criminalizes the cyberbullying of teachers or faculty or staff by students. So now that this law is in place, what can students not do? What is now illegal for them to do online?
Well, there's a few things. Obviously you've got to have the intent to torment or intimidate, but basically building a fake profile on a teacher or staff. Without their knowledge, or posting or encouraging others to post on internet private or personal or sexual information pertaining to a school employee, or posting pictures of a teacher to a site would violate that law, or accessing a computer network for the purpose of intimidating. So making statements, whether true or false, intending to provoke or unlikely to provoke a third person to stalk or to harass that teacher. So it covers a pretty wide gamut of activity on the internet.
How do you prove intent?
Well, and that's going to be the issue, and I think we're going to have to look at these cases individually, and it's going to be specific to what they're doing at the time.
So cyberbullying charges could be filed if students create false profiles of faculty or staff. Who would file the charges?
Well, the teacher or the staff member themselves would file the – well, they would file a police report. Ultimately, the decision to charge would boil down to myself or the investigator and the district attorney.
Prior to this law, if this happened, what would the teacher – what would the process have been for the teacher?
Well, the process is generally the teacher reports it to the principal, who then contacts our department, and then I would get involved, begin an investigation, try to determine who the identity of the person that created it, and work with the social network insider, whoever it is, to get it shut down.
And the penalty would be what when you discover who the person perpetrating this was?
Sure. Well, I don't really get involved in the school disciplinary action. What I do know is that it falls under one of the rules in the student code of conduct, and generally they'll get some suspension time.
So now, with this law, does the teacher automatically go to the district attorney or to the police and file a report, or could it be handled the old way?
It could be handled the old way, and most of the times I believe that's probably how it's going to occur. It's going to have to be a pretty severe incident.
And who determines the severity of that incident? Who determines that? Is that up to the teacher because I'm the aggrieved party if I'm the teacher, or is that up to the district attorney or the principal? Who makes that decision?
Well, I guess it depends if that teacher feels it's enough to file a police report, and ultimately be up to the district attorney to prosecute.
As you said a minute ago, it would be a cyberbullying crime to post private, personal – these are the words of the law – private, personal, or sexual information, or posting real or doctored images. Does that mean that you cannot post a photograph of your teacher, even if it's undoctored on your Facebook page?
Well, one of the prime examples of something that might fall into something like this was a case that happened in CMS several years ago where someone at a fifth grade graduation ceremony shot video of a young female teacher, kind of zeroed in on her private parts. She was apparently quite attractive, and they created a YouTube video and set it to the song Hot for Teacher. And apparently this young woman was very traumatized by this. You know, they didn't alter it. It was her. I don't even know if she was how identifiable she was, but the idea that somebody was sitting out there in the audience at her school and kind of looking at her lustfully, and my understanding is that they never figured out who did it, but suspected that it was an alleged adult, a chronological adult, if not a mature person. But she apparently left the profession because she just felt so exposed by that. So had a student done that and been caught, I think that's something we might see.
So would that have been posted with intent to torment or harass?
Yeah, and I think you're going to have to
look at... Or was that a joke?
You're going to have to look at what's posted with it, what comments are posted with it to kind of help guide that. I think the picture itself, probably not. It's going to depend on where the picture, what site the picture was posted to, the comments around it, and the totality of that picture and how it was posted to determine whether or not it's going to meet that element.
And I think it was interesting. Detective Lynch and I were talking before, and you know, I asked you how, you know, in your past several years with the district, how many instances would you have considered charges in this case that you think it would be merited? And you said maybe one case?
Maybe one case that I can think of. And quite honestly, what I have found is that most times once you get the parents involved, they're shocked. In almost every case that I can think of that I have been involved in, once the parents got involved, they're shocked at the activity of their child.
I want to come back to that because that's an important factor in all of this. But there are people in favor of this law and those who are opposed to this law. And we're going to hear now from representatives of both sides. And Lisa, you spoke with a proponent of the law. We've mentioned her several times in this conversation already.
Sure. You'll hear from Judy Kidd. She's the head of the Classroom Teachers Association. And she's also a high school teacher at Independence High School.
Our goal was to see to it that we didn't have to go through expunging false accusations. And as a result of that, sharing some of these stories that I just shared with you, sharing that with the legislators that were writing and helping to push the bill through, they decided that they wanted to have North Carolina on the cutting edge to prevent cyberbullying because it was another vehicle that they saw in the offing and that they wanted to stop it before it really got into full swing.
Why is this something that can't be handled in school alone? I mean, why can't you just handle a situation like this with suspensions but have to look at charges?
Because it doesn't happen in school. And how do you punish someone for doing something out of school? It is a crime. And so to make it a crime is the way to go. And that way there's no question. Besides, out-of-school suspension, what does that get you? It gets some kids what they really want anyway, and that's a vacation. I mean, we're going to have to come up with some other way to punish wrongdoing and to bring our society back to, you know, swing the pendulum back so that society recognizes things for what they are. We have to recognize that we need to be honest in all of our dealings and that we need to establish some moral ground that we deal with one another. And telling lies is not right. And making up stories to get what you want should not be rewarded. And so we need to be very careful about what we reward our children with.
How much of a problem is it, cyberbullying, targeting teachers?
Legislators saw that it was something that they wanted to head off before it became a problem. I'm sure that the people at Sandy Hook, at the elementary school that just got assaulted, would have liked to have had other plans in place before someone who was sick went in and shot and killed as many people as they did. Hindsight's 20/20, and it's always easier to prepare for something after it's happened. But to prepare for it in advance, I think, requires a lot of courage.
The law says intimidate or torment a teacher. In your mind, do you have a definition for what that is?
in my mind, it's not what I decide intimidating and tormenting is. It is what the district attorney decides intimidation and tormenting is. If someone constantly calls you, if someone is doing something that is, frankly, truthful situation and an untruthful situation are different things. You know, tell the truth and you're fine as far as I'm concerned. But if you have to make it up to get your point across, then be prepared to go to court.
Judy Kidd, president of the Classroom Teachers Association of North Carolina. There are serious concerns about such a law being on the books, and one of the groups expressing serious reservations is the American Civil Liberties Union. Chris Brook is legal director for the ACLU North Carolina, and he joins us for a few minutes to talk about their position on this law. Mr. Brook, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy holidays.
Same to you. In an article in the Charlotte Observer shortly after this law went into effect, it said the ACLU was gearing up to fight and urging students who were charged to call the ACLU. You want to defend them because this is the only way this law can be challenged, I take it?
Well, I think we're very, very concerned about the constitutionality of this law, and it is written in such a fashion where it's exceptionally vague, and you've touched on some of those points already. For example, forbidding conduct that is intended to intimidate or torment without defining, so that students can know what is and is not illegal, without defining intent or torment, and those sort of vague prohibitions have frequently been struck down by the court. And in addition, as you touched on earlier, the statute bans someone from making any statement, whether true or false, intended to immediately provoke someone. Criminalizing true statements, I can't imagine that a court is going to sign off on that.
Yeah, we haven't gotten into this very deeply, but that's one of the things that is kind of troubling, at least to me, that you're not allowed to post a true statement. You're not allowed to post a real photograph of a teacher. And that just seems odd to me. I take it you're an attorney. Are you an attorney?
Yes.
Why don't normal libel or slander laws suffice?
I think that's one of the questions that we have here, is that you have slander and libel laws that are on the books that teachers or faculty members can take advantage of if there is speech that is personally impugning and inaccurate. Also, you know, I do have to say, in regards to your last guest on the show, I was positively baffled by the Sandy Hook reference. That's a situation where there was a non-student who did something absolutely horrific. And, you know, more to the point, the Supreme Court has said that true threats of imminent violence are not constitutionally protected. So to draw some connection between the horrible events that happened in Connecticut.
Well, that was Judy Kidd who was saying that the legislature
seeks to prohibit.
That was Judy Kidd.
Inaccurate.
That was Judy Kidd, who was the president of the Classroom Teachers Association of North Carolina, saying that she felt that the legislature, she was perhaps putting words in their mouth, but the legislature wanted to head off these things before they become a problem. And you're saying that's not constitutional.
Well, it's not constitutional, and it's also disproportionate. When you're giving 16 and 17-year-olds permanent criminal records for a problem that her response to whether it existed was, well, we should actually be heading it off in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a recent interview with the president of the North Carolina Association of Educators talking about how frequent cyberbullying is, and he indicated that there have been very few reports that he had heard of. So you have a situation where you're potentially saddling 16 and 17-year-olds, and we're not condoning, mistakes that 16 and 17-year-olds make, but we, you know, have all been 16 and 17, and I'm sure that all of your listeners this morning have said some things at that point that they wish they could take back. But those rare instances to put somebody in the criminal justice system and make it harder for them to get a job, be a productive member of society throughout their entire life, I think that that is disproportionate.
And she was also asked about why this was needed. And she said, you know, these things, these cyberbullying attacks don't happen in schools. So school policy isn't sufficient. How does school policy control something that happens off campus, out of school hours, et cetera? So what is the recourse to that?
Well, you know, I think that a number of schools have attempted to regulate that sort of conduct. I mean, what the Supreme Court has said on this is that if speech materially and substantially interferes with appropriate discipline in a school, then the school can sanction that speech. They said that in the Tinker case. Now, we, you know, would encourage any student who's been censured in any way for constitutionally protected speech, for example, true speech, to get in contact with us. But this concept that schools are powerless or they're not existing remedies on the books just does not comport with reality.
Mm-hmm. How much of a concern is it that this law singles out students? Because if we've noted, if a parent did the same thing, they could not be charged. Another newspaper pointed out if you had two 17-year-olds pulling a malicious online prank on a teacher and one was a dropout, the student could be charged, but the dropout could not be. Is that a legal issue?
Yeah, I think that that is a legal issue, that we seem to be targeting just particular members of society for this particular sanction. And I think it also highlights something else is, you know, I guess there's something that I would agree with Ms. Kidd in regards to, is that this statute is, in fact, on the cutting edge. This is the first statute aimed at preventing students from bullying employees in the nation. North Carolina state teachers and faculty members, of which my mom is actually one, have now a protection that no other state employee in the nation is afforded. This is the first statute of its type to impose criminal sanctions upon 16, 17-year-old students. And the fact that they could receive those sanctions. They could receive, you know, 60 days in jail, but a 17-year-old dropout could not, but, you know, a 22-year-old or a parent could not, really raises further issues about whether we're unduly targeting students.
And some say that this law, and that you've just referred to this, creates a special protected class, school employees, who are then, by this law, deserving of special treatment. Does that kind of thing have precedent anywhere else in the law?
I don't know of any situation in North Carolina or in other states where we've suspended the First Amendment because we say that certain individuals are entitled to be protected from, for example, free speech, for example, true speech. There's just not any template for that. And, you know, the unfortunate reality is this would criminalize students making accurate and truthful comments that expose teachers having, for example, inappropriate relationships with students. You know, obviously that's a rare occurrence, but the concept that, you know, again, we're going to potentially be putting 16-year-olds in jail for 60 days for actually accurately reporting on what might be inappropriate conduct by their teachers, it should unnerve everyone. And it really sends, you know, an unnerving message about to students about their interaction with government officials that, you know, criticism can somehow be criminalized.
Is that an unintended consequence of this law, or is it written specifically to say you can't post a true statement and with the knowledge that...
No, it's absolutely, you know, it says, and I'm quoting here, making any statement, whether true or false, intending to immediately provoke...
Can you stay with us on Can you stay with us on the other side of the break for a few minutes?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
We have to take a break. Chris Brook is with us, legal director of the ACLU in North Carolina. We'll come back with more and take some phone calls as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and desserts, baking, wedding, bridal shower, grooms, cakes, and more. Cake tasting appointments are now available for 2013 brides and grooms located at Park Road Shopping Center. Details at desserts.com. It's the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, the national hour. First, President Barack Obama taps Vice President Joe Biden to lead a gun violence task force. House Republicans vow to push a plan B to avert the fiscal cliff. I believe that ended. I don't believe that they're going to do that now. And four State Department officials leave after a damaging report on Benghazi, Libya. Just among the stories they'll be talking about, the International Hour coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. Or 800-603-WFAE or Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org. We're coming right back.
As 2012 draws to a close, we want to thank you for listening to and supporting WFAE. Please ensure the programming you rely on to keep you informed is here for you in 2013 by making your tax-deductible investment now. Call 704-549-9000 or give at WFAE.org. Pledge by midnight, December 31st, and you'll be automatically entered to win a trip to the Azores. No pledge is necessary to enter, but we hope you'll support WFAE. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Lisa Miller, our education reporter here at WFAE, is with us. Ann Doss Helms from the Charlotte Observer is also here. And Detective Kenneth Lynch from the CMS Police Department is here. We're talking about cyberbullying and the law that went into effect on December 1st. Also joining us, Chris Brook, legal director of the ACLU in North Carolina. You folks see this as a freedom of speech issue. Does freedom of speech give people the right to slander or libel or defame the character of someone in some way? Or are there laws on the books that protect against that already?
Yeah, there already are slander and libel actions that the law avails people of. And if there are defamatory written or spoken comments about an individual, then they can take up legal action to make that stop and to get compensation for any damage that they incurred as a result of that defamatory speech. One of the things that's frustrating to us about this situation is this really does seem to be there are remedies out there already, mm-hmm. and given what everybody on the panel has mentioned today about how rare these instances are, this really seems to be a draconian remedy in search of a problem.
Is that more difficult to prove in the cyberbullying, on the cyber universe, than it would be if it were written on a piece of paper or on the bathroom wall or spoken out loud in an auditorium setting during an assembly? I mean, would it be more difficult to prove?
Well, you know, I think that it's oftentimes difficult to prove slander and libel. I think it would be very difficult to prove that you had violated this cyberbullying statute. And you're a member of the law enforcement community from CMS, who's on the show this morning, referenced, you know, the intent to intimidate or torment. Not only are intimidate and torment undefined by the statute, but also, you know, how do you determine whether someone had that particular intent? There was a recent article in North Carolina Lawyers Weekly talking about this issue, and district attorneys from throughout the state and across the political spectrum had real concerns about that. How are they going to be able to prove what a 16-year-old's intent is? And, you know, for example, Phil Berger Jr., who's the Rockingham County district attorney, you know, criticizing this cyberbullying act, highlighting the First Amendment problems that it had, and also the problems with ever getting a conviction under this.
Before you joined us, we got into a little bit of a conversation about civil versus criminal penalties, and evidently the slander libel laws have civil penalties, and this has criminal penalties.
That's right.
Why do you suppose the legislature made these criminal versus civil penalties?
Well, I guess there's the idea that you're throwing the book at people and giving them the harshest penalty that they possibly can. Ms. Kidd earlier indicated that a number of students would regard out-of-school or in-school suspension as a vacation. I think that that's probably questionable in a lot of instances. But I think that, you know, in this instance, throwing the book at somebody is really fraught with problems. There are no other examples throughout the nation of there being criminal sanctions for cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at who you're imposing these criminal sanctions on, 16 and 17-year-olds, and bringing them into the criminal justice system, making it harder for them to get a job, making it harder for them to get education that you know, will make them productive members of society. And listen, nobody's condoning someone harassing their teacher. I was a 16-year-old, you were a 16-year-old, I'm sure that we did things, and yeah. There's a long history of writing on the bathroom stall about your teacher. That doesn't make it right, but it also means that we should be thoughtful about how we deal with those problems and not stigmatize somebody for the rest of their life.
I was going to ask this question of all of you, but and I will, and I mean it semi-flippantly here, but would this law outlaw no more What's the old song? How does the old song go? No more teachers, no more something, no more books, no more teachers' angry looks. Would that make that illegal to say?
Well, I guess that depends on whether you have the intent to intimidate and torment. I frankly can't answer that question because the legislature didn't define what intimidate or torment in this situation. But, you know, if somebody regarded it as a quote-unquote severe incident, as one of your previous guests said was, you know, the most likely ones to involve criminal conduct, then perhaps. I think that comment in and of itself highlights the vast amount of discretion that's being given when you don't define any terms in a statute and then say to school officials or say to district attorneys, all right, go out and determine whether this statute has been violated. And that's going to result in sort of arbitrary results.
You know, and I see some of the points that he's making, and I kind of see both sides of it, which is probably unique from a law enforcement standpoint. For me, when I look at it, you know, it's going to be pretty obvious for me. It's going to have to be a pretty severe, obvious case where, you know, the intent is blatant. You know, and also with our CMS has a policy already on the books that allows us to pursue disciplinary action on students even if it occurs outside of the schoolhouse. So even if they're using
– does that have the weight of law just because you're going to go after somebody outside the schoolhouse?
Well, I think
– can you do that really?
Well, we can. I mean, with our disciplinary policy, we can – if it disrupts or it's caused a disorderly and the efficient operation of the schoolhouse, then we're able to utilize disciplinary action.
Chris Brook, the legal director of the ACLU in North Carolina, thank you for the time you've given us this morning. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on the show, and happy holidays again.
Thank you. You too. One of the things that you brought up, Detective Lynch, earlier in the program is that the law, and we've talked about this on other programs, the law is kind of playing catch up to quickly developing technology,
sure.
Which there's nothing on the books for these technologies. Could this be an overreaction to a problem that is only minor because we're trying to catch up, or because legislators and others who have advocated for this don't understand technology as well as they should?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I don't want to get into the side of why they created the law or why they push for it. Obviously, there's some teachers out there or staff out there that believe that it's a problem. You know, I can see it being a real issue. Mm-hmm. I can see the technology in the hands of young impulsive teenagers can create problems. Mm. Not only for them, but you know, teachers long term.
Well, let's talk to a teacher. Wayne identifies himself as a teacher. He's been holding on for a while. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Go ahead.
I just right off the bat, I just want to say in support of Judy Kidd, she is, you know, the proverbial Moses for teachers and students, not only in just CMS, but also North Carolina. And I think the efforts that she has gone through to get this law on the books has been phenomenal, mainly because I've suffered from false accusations in previous school systems. I've worked for four different systems outside of CMS, and not all school systems are created equal. CMS may have good way of handling these types of situations. But I can tell you, outside of CMS, smaller systems or systems with less representation, lack of leadership, they don't handle these things like they should be done in-house. And so laws like this are necessary because I lost my job over false accusations that the school even found were unfounded. But because the parents got involved, and these parents weren't reasonable, they weren't shocked because the parent involved in this situation wanted to push it, brought a lawsuit against the school because the school didn't handle it properly, and I became the scapegoat. In order for that system to get out of their lawsuit, they had to let go of me. And I didn't have tenure, so it was just easy. Well, we're just not going to renew your contract. And so I had to leave the system. Then a charges against me, which both were dropped in court because they were completely false. But I had two charges on my record that kept me almost from getting my next job, almost kept me from coming back to CMS, until it finally got expunged out of my pocket over $800.
So is this a reason why this law exists? And will this new law, in your opinion, Detective, stop this kind of thing from happening in the future?
Well, I don't know if it's going to stop it totally. I think it's going to, you know, it adds an extra layer of protection that's utilized. It's another tool in the toolbox for me to utilize when we have these cases. The bottom line is we focus so much on cyberbullying from student on student, and we want kids to come to school in a safe environment. We want our teachers and staff members to be able to come to work every day in an environment conducive for learning, and this will help us to stop that, hopefully.
Wayne, thank you for your call. Jess emails, the discussion is focusing on primarily high school students. What about students at the college level? In college, FERPA laws disallow teachers from contacting parents and sharing information about the student, so it seems that having a lawful recourse would be necessary. Also, doesn't a young adult's criminal record reset at age 18? To be charged with this wouldn't have an everlasting impact, and it applies to if it applies to college students, aren't they old enough to know better? This law does not apply to college students, does it?
I don't know if there's an age limit on it or not. Okay. It just says, so I'm not real sure. I can't answer that question.
No one can answer that
question? It says an employee, a school employee, is a local board of education, a regional school, but –
It doesn't.
This law seems vague on so many levels. Why is that? Is that the normal course of events, that laws are written like this, or is this just a badly written law?
I don't know enough about law and the legislative process. You're probably our closest thing to an expert.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly not going to criticize the law. My job is to enforce it and to utilize it when appropriate. And while I can see both sides, I understand it.
I did talk to a lawyer who's expert as far as First Amendment cyberspace stuff, and he says, you know, I said, could this survive a challenge? And he said, this law is really broad, and he said, I really don't think it could survive
you
a challenge.
You also
like that.
Talked to some students to get their reaction to this law.
I did indeed. These are EastMech students. Most of them were really surprised to hear about it. And they said, cyberbullying, we hear about cyberbullying all the time between, you know, students. I mean, we see it happen, but they said cyberbullying teachers, it was a new one to them.
And here's what they had to say.
If it's a threat, I think it should be a crime. But if they're just like, oh, you're a dumb teacher or whatever, or ignorant teacher, you suck, you can't teach, I guess it should be like suspension from school, and if it happens more than once, just expelled or whatever.
It should be a criminal law because you're ruining a person's life.
Everybody says stupid things.
Yeah, you can't arrest everybody for saying something stupid, because if that was the case, everybody I know would be in jail.
Or like suspended from school, but not
arrested. Arrested. It's not that serious.
I believe that this should not be done. However, it would be extremely difficult to capture the person by seeing them do it. It might violate Amendment freedom of speech.
If they get suspended from school, they just gonna come back and it's gonna be even worse.
Yeah.
So if they get police involved, that might make a difference.
Jared on Facebook writes, does the law give teachers protections that we would not give our celebrities and political figures? People are paid good money to draw negative political cartoons for our president, for example. This does give teachers extra protection, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does give them extra protection, but you got to look at the position, what we ask our teachers to do every day, and the their character is on the line. once that statement is put out there, sometimes it's just not going to go away.
What has been the reaction of teachers to this? Do you know, Ann?
I do not know. I have not heard a lot of discussion about this. It is relatively new, and there's so much kind of going on the educational horizon that I don't think this is high on anybody's radar unless and until they find themselves in this situation.
You also have said, Detective, that in almost every case of this type that you've been involved in, the parents were not aware of the child's activity on the internet or on social media sites. What happens when they are made aware?
Sure. Well, most of them are shocked. A lot of them, you know, really have no idea the access that their kids have to the internet and to social networking and social media. A lot of them just really are clueless. And, you know, I think that's where the problem lies. When I say problem, meaning we really need to push our parents to get more involved in knowing what their kids are doing, knowing that iPhone, that smartphone, when you hand it to your child. And some of these kids are getting iPhones as young as 9, 10 years old. I was recently at an elementary school doing an internet safety class with about 150 kids. And when I ask how many of you have a cell phone with internet access, I'd probably 80% of the class raise their hands. Mm-hmm. And we're talking fourth and fifth graders.
Wow.
You know, and I don't think parents have a good understanding of what you're handing that child, which is basically a miniature computer and access to the entire world, in the hands of an impulsive kid.
Joe tweets, does this new law protect teachers from libel or defamation on sites where students rate teachers? I don't know anything about these sites, so does it? Or is it, or would that, those sites also, if they're online, they would fall under the jurisdiction of this act, would they not?
Yeah. I guess it would depend on what they're doing, what they're posting, what the comments are.
Well, if you're rating a teacher, you're making a comment about that teacher, true or false, and it seems the way this law is written, true or false, they can go after you, right?
Well, that's what appears. And again, like I said, I'll continue to go back to the fact that I think it's going to be those obvious severe cases that will get prosecuted if we get to that point.
Okay. Well, we'll wait to see what happens in the coming year, I guess. Detective Kenneth Lynch with the CMS Police Department, a specialist on internet issues, and Doss Helms, the education reporter for the Charlotte... Maybe there's several education reporters. I don't know.
No, I bet.
Education reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Lisa Miller, education reporter for us here at WFAE. Thank you all for being here. Happy holidays to everybody.
Same to you.
Thank you.